Hello, this is episode 40 of Tech Policy Weekly from the Technology Liberation Front for Monday, January 26, 2009. I'm your host, Baron Soka of the Progress and Freedom Foundation. Today we're discussing government transparency, President Obama's promise to have the most accountable administration in history, and how the Internet plays a vital role in that effort. Joining me for today's discussion are regular contributors here at the TLF, who've written extensively about these issues. First, Jerry Brito of the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
Jim Harper of the Cato Institute and WashingtonWatch.com. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Baron.
And we're also joined by a special guest from the Sunlight Foundation, John Wunderlich, who's policy director of Sunlight, which is a nonprofit whose mission is to create government transparency through the use of technology. Hi, John.
Hello.
So, John, let me first turn to you. Why is transparency a good thing?
I think there are a lot of reasons for that. First of all, I think it's without transparent government, democracy can't really work. There's no way that a vote or any kind of citizen participation in government or self-determination can be meaningful at all unless people are able to perceive what their government's doing. So I think the first point is accountability. The second one would be that we want our elected representatives to be acting in our best interests. And when there's real transparency about what they're doing, that creates positive incentives for them to do the right thing. And then the third category, I would say, is collaboration. People have a real desire to participate with a rich civic life and actually contribute to what their government does. And without transparent policies or information policy that gives them access to what's actually going on, there's very little chance that they're going to be able to contribute to their government.
Jerry, what data isn't the government already providing?
The interesting thing about this is that, you know, we're probably the most transparent country in the world. There might be some countries that are doing a little bit better, but we're a very transparent country. You can get pretty much any sort of data the government has. The problem is that it's not online, right? So if you're in California, you've got to come down to D.C., go to a basement on the hill, to find some data you're interested in, right? So for example, say you're interested in income disclosure forms, which every member of Congress and senior staffers have to file, right? That discloses where their income came from, how much they made in a particular year. Well, you just can't get that online from any official source, and that's just crazy. And there's all sorts of data like that. Votes of our members of Congress oftentimes are not online. You can't just find a member and see a list of their votes. We are a transparent country, but there's so much data that is just not available online.
Why is that so important?
Well, for the reasons that John talked about. And I would add to that accountability, right? Because if you want to hold your government representative, for example, accountable for how he votes, you got to know how he voted. And if you want to hold him accountable for some connections he might have, if you want to make an informed decision when you vote at the ballot box, you want to know where his income's coming from.
So that's a way of accountability, creating the positive incentives that John talked about, as well as promoting involvement in civic life.
There's two aspects to accountability. One is allowing citizens to go to the ballot box, express themselves in the press, et cetera, with the information that they know. The other aspect is when a representative or an official of some kind is working, they have an incentive. If they know that everything they do will be disclosed, they have an incentive to do the right thing.
Jim, is it enough that the government simply make data available online, or does it have to do more?
Well, it depends on what you mean by online. You can publish PDFs of photographs of documents, and that's not much better. It's a little better, but not much better than putting paper in a basement somewhere in D.C. The important thing is to get the data into formats that we can work with, that is, anybody can work with. Get a hold of the data, sift it, slice it, dice it, and discover new things. John and his colleagues at the Sunlight Foundation are constantly churning out new ways of working with government data. So it's not just online, it's online and in usable formats that I think matters a lot.
John, can you give us some examples of what Jim just mentioned?
Sure. I think a great example there is we have a new site called capitalwords.org, and that takes the Congressional Record, which is this enormous body that's put out every day of everything that's said on the floor of the House and Senate, and that's published in text files and on PDFs online that are very difficult to deal with. So what our Sunlight Labs has done is take all the text from the Congressional Record and build it into a database, put it in a database that's in a structured format that's easy to use, and then suddenly, with a little bit of creative design, an interface where you can see the most spoken word for every day or trends over time, or you can see that every summer the word energy or the word oil starts to be used a whole lot more around the same period of time. So all these trends and patterns emerge when you can look at the data properly. And the big difference there is that in one case you have a text file or a PDF, and in the other case you have a well-designed database that allows you to do deeper analysis or visualization. So that's one big part of what transparency has to mean when data is online, is that it has to be presented in a well-designed fashion or in a structured format.
Now, Jim, you're doing some of that with WashingtonWatch.com, aren't you?
Yeah, I take and I scrape data from the Thomas website, the legislative website. Frankly, GovTrack.us does a great job as sort of the central clearinghouse for scrape data. I also do it myself just 'cause. And it's a lot of work, and it's lumpy, and you have to constantly check and make sure that you're getting the good data. It's a challenge, but once you've got the data, you can move it around and present it in ways that are useful to people. And we try at Washington Watch, Open Congress does it, GovTrack does it, and among us, we're getting an American public that's a little bit more engaged, a little bit better able to understand what's happening with their government.
So it sounds like you're doing the most you can with the data that's currently available, right?
Yeah, if I had endless time and endless money, I could do more. But we work within constraints.
but it sounds like a big part of this push for open government would be having the government make more data available so that people like you with websites like yours can innovate with it, right?
Yeah, we would take less time on just trying to gather the data and spend more time on making it more available in better ways for the public to use.
So, John, why is it the government's responsibility to help Jim?
First and foremost, it's the government's responsibility because there are things that they can do that no one else can, right? So in addition to creating an army or coining money, they're also the only ones that have the ability to put a mandate on all companies to file things with the SEC, or they're the only ones that can tell members of Congress that they have to tell us where their money is invested. So along with that unique power comes the fact that they're the only ones that have the information. So businesses and nonprofits and interested citizens and journalists can be curious all they want, and that curiosity and that desire to be informed will take us very far, but there are some roles that the government is the only one that can play. And when they're designing these sites and when they have these different data sets available, one of the things that we've learned is that the government doesn't know what the most interesting use of the data is going to be. So whenever you release a new data set, people that are in charge of the data are often shocked by the uses that it ends up being put to. I think a good example of that is in D.C. They had a contest to match up information sources. What was it called, guys? The Apps for
Democracy.
Thank you. And one of the really creative things they came up with was a mashup of where there are crimes and where there are bars. And you can sort of see a heat map of where the densest areas of bars are and then at any time where there are crimes. And I'm told that the D.C. police love that that's a really innovative view and that it actually helps them to figure out where they should be at any time.
John, when you say one of the things that they came up with, you don't mean the D.C. government, do you? You mean
they had a contest that just said, here is our data. Put it together, and if you do the best job designing it, then you'll win a prize.
Can I add to that something?
Prize money, sure.
The key thing about the DC experiment that made it so interesting is that DC in this case was completely transparent. They put out the data in the usable format that we're talking about, and that allowed third parties to do these amazing things, right? But if DC hadn't put this data out, this is not, you know, like bar location data or crime statistic data. It's the sort of data that would be very, very difficult for a third party to scrape the way Jim is scraping the Thomas site.
So basically, Jerry, you're talking about government providing the raw material for innovation and software development.
That's right. And, you know, to add to what John was saying about why it's government's business to provide this raw material, I think one of the most basic reasons is that we own it. You know, it's our data. We paid for it. It's public. And so we should get it in the easiest and, you know, honestly, the most cost-efficient way of getting it.
And what happens if the government doesn't do that, Jerry?
Well, if the government doesn't do it, well, first of all, it's our job to sort of try to push them to do it.
Try it out of their hands.
That's right. And the way we do it is that if government doesn't make the data available, third parties will do it. Third parties will, you know, like Jim is doing, certainly like all the sites that the Sunlight Foundation is involved with, they go out there, they scrape the data, which is sort of a technical way for reading what's on the screen and translating it into a usable format. I'll give you a good example of this. I was talking about income disclosure forms that are basically on paper in the basement on the Hill. Well, the Washington Post didn't like this, and so they basically sent an army of interns down to the Hill with a bunch of coins, and they photocopied every single one of these. And they came back to the office, and they scanned them all, and they put them all online. And this is great effort that really, I mean, they shouldn't have to be expending. They could be doing, you know, much more interesting things. But if the government doesn't do it, third parties will take the data and make it available. We'll liberate it.
But it's more costly for them, for the government. If the private sector has to do that, if private individuals or companies have to go out and recreate what the government could do more automatically, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of legacy systems that need to be upgraded, but in theory, it would be very simple for government to automate this process so that it would cost virtually nothing.
So, Jim or John, do you want to give us some more good examples of transparency?
Well, there aren't many considering what could be done, but go ahead, John.
A really good recent example is the creation of the USAspending.gov database, which was modeled after FedSpending.org, which the Sunlight Foundation and OMB Watch created it with support from the Sunlight Foundation. And that's a website that shows all federal grants and contracts. And when the nonprofit sector generated this website and put it together in a useful, structured way, and it had all the documentation for how one could access the data, when the government made their website, they saw so much value out of the example set by the nonprofit world that they basically have exactly the same website. So the API has the same documentation and the same search features are there. It's very, very similar. So that was an enormous step forward in terms of the transparency around federal grants and contracts.
I'll say that as a having used that site, it isn't all the way there. That is, there's still this, it's still intermediated by the site. I mean, the data is intermediated by the site in ways that doesn't explode it the way you could really get with just getting all the data out there to mix and mash. So much more to come in that area even. But that, I agree, is progress, forward progress to be sure.
Right. An API is always a useful step, but something that we've been talking about a lot lately is for a data source to truly be transparent, you need bulk-level data access.
And, John, when you're talking about an API, you're talking about an application's program interface, right?
Right. An application programming interface, which makes it possible for real-time combination of data. So you can pull in data from a map and pull in data from where the crime is and put them together on a website based on a search that just happened.
So is that what people mean when they say mashup?
I think an API is one of the tools that make it easy to build things like mashups, right? So that's one easy way to combine data in real time based on something like the words that you put into a form on a website or a certain kind of search.
Okay, Jerry, are there any other good examples of transparency you want to talk about?
Well, good examples, again, I would refer you to what the District of Columbia CTO did. His name is Vivek Kundra, and really amazing thing. He put up something called a DC data catalog. And if you do a Google search, you'll find it. And it's just tons and tons and tons of just data streams, right? So this is data that's being collected in DC's government computers, and it's just being piped straight out to the web. So this is stuff that previously had just been available to DC officials. Now it's on the web. You know, they're missing spending data, which I think is sort of important. But so much data is there, from crime statistics to roadkill pickups are on there, which is amazing stuff that you can just plot and map and mix and mash.
Thanks, Jerry. Before we talk more about this chief technology officer idea, which is something that's been in the news lately, do you want to give us any examples of bad attempts at transparency?
Well, to be flipped, the first thing I would say is, you know, just visit any random government website. Just go on the Google federal government search and just do a random search and look at any website, and you will be taken to what the web was like in 1999. But I've been focusing on regulation, right? Regulation is where a lot of activity in the government takes place, right? This is where a lot of the rules and requirements for businesses and individuals happen. And our regulatory system is just not transparent online. And if you look at regulations like Gov, which is the Bush administration's attempt to have a unified sort of docket where all rules and all proposed rules converge, it's just, it leaves a lot to be desired. I like to pick on the FCC, which is an independent agency, which chooses not to participate in regulations like Gov, and it has its own docketing system. You know, it's been 5 years since it was last updated. you can't locate any document unless you have a docket number, right? So if you are just a citizen, you're not a lobbyist, you're not a DC insider, you're not going to know what the docket number is. There's no full text search, right? Even if you could search, you probably couldn't find anything in many cases because they'll use image PDFs like Jim was talking about, which are not searchable, right? And I think most egregious to this, they have their robots.txt file, which, you know, our audience is pretty tech savvy. They probably know what that is. But it's basically a switch that tells the Google and the other commercial search engines whether they can search a site or not. It's turned off. So even if you did a search on Google and there was a document that matched your search in the FCC's docketing system, you wouldn't find it that way. And, you know, last but not least, there are no RSS feeds. There's no structured data at all. So you can subscribe to the data. You can mash it up in any way. It's just, you know, awful.
Yeah, but Jerry, the changes you're talking about would put lots of very good paying jobs out of existence in DC. I mean, I used to be a communications lawyer and I spent many, many hundreds of hours looking through documents that your search engine could do instantly. I mean, aren't you talking about just destroying the legal profession here?
Well, you know, if you lose your job, I'm sure the Sunlight Foundation will be hiring folks to take the data and mash it up.
I was going to say, Baron, that your argument is self-refuting. We want you out of a job, so it's working out fine.
So what about this idea of creating a chief technology officer for the federal government? Jerry, I've heard that this has been inspired, at least in part, by D.C.'s effort. Is that true?
Well, I don't know if it's been inspired by the DC effort. Maybe John or somebody else can talk about that. But I will say this. There's been a lot of consternation, at least initially, on the part of libertarians and conservatives about the CTO. And I think that has to do with the fact that it was announced at the same time that Barack Obama introduced his technology plan. And so the idea is that the CTO would be a technology czar that would be in charge of implementing net neutrality and broadband regulation and so on and so forth. And that doesn't seem to be the case. If you read closely everything that Barack Obama and his team has ever said about this position, it would be a chief transparency officer, right? It would be a CTO not of the United States, but a CTO of the federal government, right? So somebody who looks at the computer systems that the federal government uses and how they interact with the web and upgrade them. And I think that's a good thing.
Well, Jerry, that's a great term, chief transparency officer. Maybe if the Obama administration used that, more people would be comfortable with the idea.
Right. I think they're you know, it's understandable why they're trying to call a CTO sort of like a standard name.
John, can you tell us any more about what this chief technology or chief transparency officer will actually do?
I'm not sure what the position is going to – what the responsibilities are actually going to be for the position. But I think Jerry made a really good point, and that's that there's been a lot of misguided consternation and a lot of confusion, frankly, about what the CTO is going to be doing. I think part of that is that it's only been mentioned a few times, and even the paragraph in the agenda book that the Obama campaign published, it had one short paragraph that had some things about government operations, but when you throw something up like CTO, that's such a huge term, and say it's in charge of the whole federal government or for the country, that's something that people's fears and ideas are going to end up being projected on. Now, we certainly, when the Sunlight Foundation looks at it, we see a huge potential for open government and policy reform that has to do with how the federal government uses technology. And part of the reason for that is that the current state of authority over technology in the executive branch is really splintered into little inefficient jurisdictions that sort of fight with each other, and sometimes it's not clear who's in charge, and sometimes when OMB is the one that should have authority over something, they've actually let a different body be in charge because they don't want the responsibility. And so all the infighting and confusion there has led to a lot of inefficiencies. So in a structure like the executive branch, it makes sense for technology policy about how they use technology to be set from one central vision about how they're going to standardize metadata or when it's appropriate to use a cloud service and when one should have their own server or all those different policies. It makes a lot of sense for them to be centralized. So we're excited about the thought of one office setting those things and giving everyone else a chance to follow a central vision like the one Obama has recently set about open government and transparency.
So, John, do you think that this will work that way, that the chief technology officer will set an example that other agencies can choose to follow, or do you think that this is going to be forced, if you will, on every agency in the federal government, and would that be a good thing?
Well, up to a few days ago, to be honest, we really weren't sure. I mean, we were just going on the few promises that were made publicly, and it's been a while. I think everyone was excited about the CTO being appointed, and then there was some doubt because it was so long since it had been discussed. But Obama's new memo on transparency actually directs the CTO, the OMB director, and the GSA administrator to come up with an open government directive. I think that's really encouraging about what role the CTO is going to play.
You know, Baron, you're asking if this is something that you set an example that agencies choose to follow where they'd be forced on them. And I think it has to be forced on them. You know, enforced really isn't the word because, I mean, again, this is the president. He's the chief executive, and he gives the orders on down. And let me tell you why I think it should be forced. Take regulations.gov. The way that the administration structured this is that it's completely voluntary. Agencies don't have to participate. And even if an agency chooses to participate in regulations.gov, it can choose what data to provide into the system. That's great. It provides for lots of buy-in from the part of the agencies, makes it easier. But if you are a citizen and you go to regulations.gov and you try to search, you have completely spotty data. And if you do a search for a term and nothing comes back, you might assume, well, this is regulations.gov. This is the clearinghouse for the federal government's regulatory information. And you go away thinking there's nothing on this topic, when in fact the FCC, for example, doesn't participate. And some agency might participate, but only partially. So it has to be across the board.
So, Jerry, I can see how requiring every agency to make their data open and accessible would be a great thing because it would provide that raw material we were talking about earlier. But do you see any downside to having every federal agency have to follow the same specific technological implementation standard, not about RSS or data formats, but, for example, using the same kind of website or the same sort of content management system?
No, right. I think there has to be flexibility. And like you say, I do think that what the directive should be would be about what kind of data format, what kind of – I mean, again, we've learned from experience that the way to go about this is to set a goal and let the agencies figure out how to do it. But the goal's got to be clear, and it can't be any sort of opt-out, right? You have got to offer all of your regulatory data, for example. You've got to offer all your spending data. It's got to be in this format. And how you go about it, you know, depends on your legacy system, depends on your budget, et cetera.
So I think another part there would be goals and assistance, right?
Right.
So if you're a web manager that's told, come up with some sort of a creative way of involving citizen input, that's just such a wide open question that there really needs to be best practices or ideas or communities of practice to give people the encouragement they need.
So we had an event at Cato a month or so ago called Just Give Us the Data, Prospects for Revolutionary Uses of Government Data. And I think that part of the aim of that headline, at least, is to get past all those issues. If the data is out there for nonprofits and for-profits to use to mix and mash, the question of what the agencies do in terms of their websites, in terms of their searches, in terms of their APIs, those will start to be mooted, and they'll actually be brought along in the slipstream behind the leaders on this, which are I think are going to be the nonprofits and for-profits once we get access to the data. So I'd like to, you know, that's a question that they'll need to be pulled behind the leaders, I think.
What about changing the law here? Do we need to change the Freedom of Information Act?
I think we're talking about something that for the most part is bigger than FOIA, and that's the government's responsibility and what they can push out. There are problems with FOIA. The certain kind of exemptions that the government is allowed to invoke are routinely abused for reasons that lead to more waste or in order to cover things up, and that's a real problem. But I think that's a little bit separate from the idea of government data sets and the sort of technology policies that will give broad access and enable businesses and nonprofits to really innovate with them, and other government employees also to innovate with this data.
Done well enough, changes to the data rules would obviate the need for FOIA in a lot of cases, because a lot of FOIA requests go for information that the government could just be publishing as a matter of course, and that kind of brings us to the Obama administration's new transparency moves, which we should certainly talk about.
So, Jim, tell us, is Obama going far enough?
Well, there are two major policy documents. They weren't executive orders that came out in the second day of the new administration, and that's good. Obviously, the Obama campaign was very open and very Web 2.0 hip, and two directives came out. One is an open government directive, and one was a change to FOIA. I think they're good. John, I think, thinks they're good, but I'm not sure that they went far enough. I think the campaign and certainly the transition set a powerful precedent by having truly open transition. There was a program called Seat at the Table, and any submission to the transition was put online. People were allowed to comment, obviously allowed to look at the documents that were presented, allowed to comment, et cetera, et cetera. My hope had been that that would be ported over into the new White House and perhaps then ported out to the agencies from there. But there was no sign of that happening and no sign yet. And it's now it's getting to be too late because the practices are already in place and nobody's going to want to open back up the documents that they've gotten in the White House that that they don't expect to have available. So good moves, but not large steps, just decent steps forward, in my opinion.
John, what do you think?
I think Jim's right that I'm a little bit more encouraged than him, but that's fine. I think that this is a sweeping commitment that they really laid down in the first few days since they took office, and we're really in wait-and-see mode. I mean, when we look at the memos that they put out, I mean, they talk about transparency, participation, and collaboration as these really broad top-level themes, and to pursue each of them, like participation in government, that's such a complex set of issues that one could encourage or ignore. And so having a top-level commitment to participation or to transparency is a great first step, and there are 1,000 little steps that have to come after it in order for it to be meaningful. So we're going to be watching each of them and trying to encourage them to take the right steps.
That's something I can certainly agree on, is that we have to wait and see. I don't think these were bad moves at all. It's just so many times in my experience on Capitol Hill, I saw people walk out of a member's office saying, "Oh, he's really with us. He's really with us." But those are only words until you've actually got forward motion.
So, John, what can we everyday Americans do to make sure that the Obama administration does follow through on its promises?
Well, that's a really good question. Well, I think a lot of the attention right now is going to recovery.gov. And based on the circumstances that the new president, Obama, finds himself in, I don't think we should be surprised if most of their effort gets put into that right away. Now, as far as following other things, I mean, there's a lot to look at. I think one of my best pieces of advice for individuals is that if there's something that you're interested in, go ahead and read the legislation that has to do with it, or follow all the committee hearings or the press releases. It's okay to specialize, and if you specialize even a little bit in terms of what federal information you consume, you'd be surprised how quickly you end up knowing more than any of the news reports that you read about it. So I would say follow a specific area.
Recovery.gov, by the way, is the website that is in the economic stimulus legislation. It's supposed to go to the House floor, I think, on Wednesday or Thursday this week. And recovery.gov would be, it's dictated in the legislation, would be the site that collects and shares all the information about recovery spending, contracts, et cetera, et cetera. So that can be a real precedent setter if it's done well. The legislation isn't entirely specific about open standards and open data. And that's a very interesting question because it says things about, you know, a website and searchable, and that's not quite all the way there. So it's going to be really interesting to watch as it goes through the legislative process, and certainly really interesting to watch, assuming it passes, in the implementation phase.
Jerry, any other thoughts on what we can do to get involved?
Well, I think you should also look at some of the sites that are up and running, like, for example, WashingtonWatch.com, which is Jim's site, which lets citizens, you know, do what John was saying, read the legislation, you know, get more involved, have a discussion about it. And to make a little plug for myself here, speaking of recovery.gov, I'm working with some volunteer developers to build something called StimulusWatch.org, which is sort of modeled on Washington Watch. And it's sort of to keep the recovery.gov effort accountable. And what we're doing is that we're taking the data from the U.S. Conference of Mayors report that asked for, it basically lists all the shovel-ready projects. And what we're doing is we're making a wiki page for each project and allowing folks with local knowledge to give us more detail about what these projects are, whether they're a good idea or not, and sort of get that citizen participation that way.
Okay, well, any final thoughts, John?
I just want to say thanks a lot for having me. I think this is a really valuable discussion, and it's a really exciting time to be interested in transparency because the stakes are so enormous, and at the same time, there's so much potential where even a little bit of attention on this changes it a lot. So thanks a lot.
Jim.
Well, I think we're in the early stages of a revolutionary change, and the first steps are about to be taken. Don't know exactly when it'll happen, but things will really take off at some point, and the way that government and citizens interact is going to change. People are no longer going to feel disempowered and kept outside of the system. Radically different future, assuming we you know, continue forward with open data. So it's exciting stuff to be working on right now.
Jerry.
One of the lines, or probably the line that struck the biggest chord with me from President Obama's inaugural address was when he said, it's not whether government is too big or not big enough, but whether it works. And that's a statement I can get behind. Let's see if government works. And I think the transparency is a way to find out whether government is performing. And that's something that Democrats, Republicans, liberals, libertarians, conservatives can all agree on because they all believe that the data will support their point of view. And so let's work together on this issue. I think this is a great issue for everybody to work on together and agree on.
Well, thanks, guys. Our guests again today were Jim Harper of the Cato Institute and WashingtonWatch.com, Jerry Brito of the Mercatus Center, and John Wunderlich of the Sunshine Foundation. I'm your host, Baron Soka of the Progress and Freedom Foundation, and this has been episode 40 of Tech Policy Weekly, the podcast of the Technology Liberation Front, the tech policy blog dedicated to keeping the politicians' hands off the net and everything else related to technology since 2004. You can find more episodes of our podcast on iTunes or at techliberation.com. So subscribe today and dig our podcast.